Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you this week?
I'm fantastic, Carlos. Hey, another 20-something won on the PGA Tour last weekend. Lydia Ko regained the number one spot in the Rolex ranking, and Kieran Clark's going to weigh in on the European Tour's race to the Dubai Final Series, which starts this week. We've got a fantastic show tonight, Carlos. Let's go.
We have a lot to talk about. Our practice range topic, like you mentioned, is going to be the European Tour and the race to the Dubai Final Series. We have also our very important guest, VIG of the week, is going to be Caroline Powers from Michigan State, so you don't want to miss that. But we're going to start, as usual, with the weekend backspin. We're going to start with the tournament on the LPGA, which was the Fubon LPGA Taiwan Championship played at the Miramar Golf Club Country Club in Taipei, Taiwan, where Lydia Ko, she earned her fifth LPGA Tour victory of the season, her 10th overall, taking her 2015 LPGA Tour earnings to beyond $2.7 million. She also became the youngest male or female to reach 10 wins at the age of 18 years, 6 months, and 1 day old. She breaks Nancy Lopez's LPGA record of 22 years, 2 months, and 5 days by nearly 3.5 years. Cole dedicated the win to the former New Zealand Golf president, Pasty Haskins, who passed away earlier this week, and someone Cole considers a mentor in her junior days. It was a case of the further they went, the further Cole went ahead. Her last round of 65 was the best by two. She finished with a four-day total of 20 under 268, topping runner-ups Soyeon Ryu and Yoo-Hee Ji of South Korea by 9 strokes. Charlie Hull, who was playing alongside her, she finished fourth, a shot further adrift. Another youngster, Min Jae Lee, continued her great season on the LPGA Tour when she finished in a share of 10th. And though there were disappointments with the overall performance of the Taiwan players, including 9 of the bottom 11 finishers being from the host country, and local favorite Yanni Tseng finishing T34 after very good results before this, one bright spot was the play of amateur Chan Ya-shun, who finished with a 4-over and tied for 46th in her first LPGA tournament. But you would say, why? Well, she's just 15 years old, and she turned heads on Friday when she became the only Taiwanese golfer to finish under par after the first two rounds. So, Fred, the LPGA now heads to Hainan Island off the southern coast of China for the Blue Bay Classic, where Ko and Yingbe Park will resume their rivalry.
Yeah, Lydia just wants to leave no doubt about who the best woman player in the world is right now. Since her first major win at the Evian, she has been on fire. This was a very difficult golf course, and while the rest of the field struggled, she posted 69, 67, 67, and 65. Only player in the field to post all four rounds in the 60s. She has, this season, as you mentioned, 5 wins, 15 top 10s. She now leads the world ranking, the money list, the race to CME Globe, greens in regulation, and putts per green. She hits greens and makes putts. That's a pretty lethal combination, Carlos. Ko has a total of 45 rounds in the 60s this season. In her last 20 rounds, in her last 5 tournaments, she's only posted 2 scores of 70 or over. That is consistency. As you mentioned, a pair of South Korean women, So-Young Ryu and Lee Young-ji, tied for runner-up, but they were 9 shots behind Ko. Charlie Hull picked up her 4th place finish, which moves her to number 39 in the world and number 49 in the race to the CME Globe. You know, I love Charlie Hull to death. It just seems to me like she plays a little bit too aggressively all the time. She just needs to tone that back just a little bit and not try to knock it in every pin from the fairway. If she just would play to the center of the greens a little bit more and maybe back off that driver a little bit, I really think she'd be much more consistent. Her scores would come down, but you know what? She's an aggressive kind of player, and that's the way she likes to play. So, Suzanne Pedersen popped up on the leaderboard. She always seems to play well this time of year. She finished fifth in Taiwan. And, Carlos, before I turn it back over to you, I want to just quick mention about the second stage of LPGA Q School was contested last week in Florida. Final stage is set for December 2nd through the 6th at LPGA International in Daytona Beach. Jessica Korda's little sister posted the best score of the week. She had 75, 70, 70, and a 69 for a total of 4 under. But she's still too young for the LPGA. She's weighing her options to remain an amateur and go to college or turn professional and play on the Sumatra Tour next year. The 17-year-old Korda petitioned the LPGA for a waiver to go to Q School and a bid to play Sumatra. She doesn't turn 18 until next July when she'll finally meet the LPGA's age requirement. Korda said, "I'm only allowed to do 2 stages, so this is my final stage. I'm able to get my full card for Sumatra. It's more options. It's a pretty good option. The girls out there play so well. I have good options. I'm either going to go to college or try the Sumatra Tour." A couple familiar names that also made it to final stage qualifying. Emma Talley finished T22. She's the young woman that won the 2013 U.S. Women's AM and the 2015 NCAA Division I Individual Championship. Two players that we've had on the show in the past, Caroline Powers and Holly Clyburn, both tied for 45th and are moving on. Matter of fact, we're going to hear from Caroline a little bit later in the show about her week and her sophomore year on the Sumatra Tour, Carlos.
And let's talk about now the PGA Tour, where the Shriners Hospital for Children Open was played at the TPC Summerlin in Las Vegas, Nevada. And there, PGA Tour rookie Smiley Kaufman was required to wait nearly 2 hours after his stunning final round of 61. But the wait was certainly worthwhile, as it resulted in the 23-year-old winning his first PGA Tour title and just his fifth lifetime start at that level. His win makes it 2 consecutive weeks to start the season where a PGA Tour rookie and Web.com Tour Class 2015 alumni has been successful. As you might remember, last week, another 23-year-old, this time Emiliano Grillo, won. Kaufman finished in 7th position on the regular Web.com Tour season money list after a win and a runner-up finish to gain his PGA Tour playing rights, and played well on debut as a card holder last week in Napa when 10th. This win gives him the early lead in the FedEx Cup in what was yet another advertisement at the quality of the Web.com Tour. That tourney's money list leader last year, Patton Kasir, he finished in a share of 2nd place with Kevin Na, Cameron Tringali, Jason Bond, Alex Cheka, and 3rd-round leader Brett Steckmeyer, who also is another rookie. Na had also finished runner-up in last week's Fries.com event in California and had an 11-foot putt to at least once again force a playoff, but it was not meant to be for him, but he has made an impressive start to the season. Fred, the PGA Tour moves now to Malaysia for this coming week's CIMB Classic, but so far, the class of 2015 from the Web.com Tour is a power class.
Yeah, you know, another 23-year-old rookie wins on the PGA Tour 2 weeks in a row. You know, young guys dominated on the leaderboard. And who in the world is Smiley Kaufman? Well, Jeff Babineau filed a very good piece in Golf Week introducing this to the newest invitee to the Masters. Kaufman played 4 seasons at LSU, never was a big star. Despite qualifying for the U.S. Junior Amateur at the tender age of 14 and winning the 2011 Alabama State Amateur. A very good putter who will also be one of the longest hitters on tour this season. He started 2015 with no tour status on the web.com and finished the year number 6 on the money list. He did it by being 3rd in the all-round ranking as well as birdies per round at 4.51, 5th in putting average, and 6th in driving distance at 314.7. Those are pretty good numbers, Carlos. Kaufman said he has 2 big goals this season. win the race for the PGA Tour Rookie of the Year, which he and Greil have a pretty good start on that, and make it to the Tour Championship at Eastlake. One box he didn't know he'd check off is getting to Augusta National. On Sunday, that was almost too much to comprehend. If you would have told me I had a round at the Masters, he said, if somebody was going to take me out just to play Augusta National, I would have freaked out. But now that I'm playing the Masters, it's a joke. It's unbelievable. Kaufman grew up, as you mentioned, with Pat and Kazir. They're good buddies in Alabama. And Kazir shot his own final round 63 to finish just one stroke back of Kaufman and tied with Cameron Tringale. A host of guys were also tied in that bunch. Nick Watney showed up on a leaderboard. Evidently, he likes that home cooking of Las Vegas. Posted a T11 finish. He missed 10 cuts last year, but had three top 10s and finished 58th in the FedEx Cup. It's a good year, but not the kind of years that we saw from Nick Watney earlier in his career. Back to you, Carlos.
And now let's talk about the European Tour, where we had a tournament. The UBS Hong Kong Open played at the Hong Kong Golf Club in Fan Ling, Hong Kong, and there Justin Rose outclassed Denmark's Lucas Bjerregaard by fending off the Danes' spirited challenge to win the title by one shot on Sunday. Rose, who missed a cut at the Hong Kong showpiece in 2011, made up for that disappointment by posting a 2-under-68 to win the $2 million event with a 4-day total of 17-under. Korea's Soo Min Lee signed off with his week's best score of 64 to share third place with American Patrick Reed, Australia's Jason Scribner, and England's Matthew Fitzpatrick, who keeps up popping up on the top of the leaderboards. India's Anirban Lahiri fight back did not materialize as he was let down by fatigue and could only post a 71, which meant he had to share seventh place with Asian Tour honorary member Y.E. Yang, the 2008 UBS Hong Kong Open winner, Li Wentang of Chinese Taipei, and England's Matt Ford. So Fred, Justin Rose, last week at the Fries.com, he changed clubs. 1 week after, he's winning in Hong Kong. How about this?
Yeah, it was the UBS Hong Kong Open was the final chance for European Tour players to qualify for the Race to Dubai final series and maintain their membership status for next season. Ian Poulter found himself in the unsavory position of the eager hurriedly jet to Hong Kong from Orlando when Richard Beam gave up his spot in the field to Poulter to meet the minimum number of European Tour events to keep his status to be eligible for the 2016 European Ryder Cup team. Maybe European Tour Commissioner Keith Pelley could have granted Poulter an exemption. He did it for Rory, but none was forthcoming, so the colorful one had to play some golf. Wasn't too happy about it either. I listened to him a little bit tonight on Golf Channel. He almost sounded like he'd almost would have packed it in and stayed in Orlando. He had a group of kids come over from England on a group that he was sponsoring, and he kind of hated to leave. But he posted three good rounds of 67, 66, and a final round of 69 on Sunday, but his third round, 73, left him at T29. He did accomplish his mission, however, and will move on to Turkey this week to compete in the first leg of the Race to Dubai Final Series, which, by the way, he has the best score of anybody there. He's 35 under par there. So he may have a good week. And that is a good course for him. That is a control course. It's not that long. And the greens require some good putting. So he could do well, and he has done well there. As you mentioned, Justin Rose got his second worldwide win this year in Hong Kong. He also won the Zurich Classic in New Orleans on the PGA Tour earlier in the year. The win puts Rose at number 4 in the Race to Dubai and number 6 on the official world golf ranking. Hey, what about youngster Matthew Fitzpatrick? Continued his strong play, coming off his win the prior week at the British Masters with a T3 finish in Hong Kong. You mentioned Anirban Lahiri, who contended the PGA Championship and was a member of the International President's Cup team, also collected another top 10 finish. And how about the blast from the past? Y.E. Yang posted a T7, Carlos.
Yeah, he was there. Hey, we have one more piece of news. I believe you have something to tell us about Matt Kuchar. You know, it's the second time we talk about him offshore. Maybe he should stay there. It's his second win in 2 weeks. What's going on with Matt Kuchar?
His third win, counting the President's Cup, Carlos.
Oh, yeah, third win.
Yeah. Tiger couldn't play. but made an appearance for the cameras and to chat with the media last week at the Bridgestone America's Cup Golf, America's Golf Cup, where Kuchar and Justin Huber, filling in for Tiger, won the two-man team event in Mexico. They posted 11 under par in four ball on the final day to capture the Bridgestone America's Cup last weekend. Woods was scheduled to team with Kuchar, but his second back surgery prevented him from playing. Huber is ranked number five and is the leading American on the Latino American PGA Tour. He's from right down the road here, by the way, Carlos, in Fort Wayne, Indiana. With the win in the President's Cup 2 weeks ago in Korea, plus his win last week in Fiji, this made three wins in a row for Kuchar. He's on a hot streak layout. He's going to win the Masters. He's going to be number one. Here comes Kuch.
Watch out, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, and Rory McIlroy. You have been advised of it. You have been warned. Well, that wraps up our weekend backswing. When we come back, we're going to have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News, sponsored by United Golf Network. And Fred, you got a tee shot. You're going to talk to us about China and that dreaded ban on golf memberships.
Yeah, Carlos, you know, we've been covering China ever since we started the show. We've been very interested in it, see it as a huge growth market potential for golf in Asia. I tried to reach out to Cindy Reed, who we've had on the show before, who is a golf pro in China working over there, and we weren't able to work out the timing for this week. Hopefully I'll get with her later in the week and we'll tape something for next week. But we're seeing some very disturbing news coming out of China this week with multiple reports of the communist government forbidding golf membership for Communist Party members. The timing of this announcement gets very intriguing with the PGA Tour due to hit Shanghai November 5th to the 8th for the WGC-HSBC Championship and the European Tour sticking around for the next week also for their third leg of the Race to Dubai Final Series. The new rules are a blow to China's growing market for golf, which is often seen as providing an opportunity for officials to make maybe some shady deals and an extravagance for government employees who should be serving the people. In other countries, golf is more about the sport. Here it's about the social interaction. If a company boss can't play with a government official, there's little point in spending his money. A golf retail store owner noted that his sales dropped 30 to 40% last year, and this year things are even more dismal, with regular revenues no longer being able to make ends meet. The rule bans party members from obtaining, holding, or using membership cards for gyms, clubs, golf clubs, or various other types of consumer cards, or entering private clubs. The report indicates that the penalty for violation could range from a warning to being thrown out of the party. Oh my goodness, we wouldn't want to be thrown out of the party. China has had a ban on new golf course construction since 2004, and in March, the country announced 66 courses were being shut down. Earlier this year, an LPGA event slated for China was canceled just weeks before it was to be played. The new regulations do not elaborate on why golf club memberships have been banned, but the report indicates that the clubs are perceived as places where officials have cut shady deals. There we are with the shady deals things again. I can't business deals on a golf course. I never heard of such a thing, Carlos. How could they think such a thing? I am simply aghast. Anyway, this is seen as a huge blow to the growth of golf in China. The PGA Tour has the new China Tour. Chinese amateurs are continuing to play well in world events, and the golf travel business to China is booming, as well as Chinese golfers coming to the U.S. to play golf. As Chinese workers continue to grow in wealth and affluence, they're going to want to play some golf. The government may just as well get on board. This does not seem to make sense to me, Carlos, but I am not wise in the ways of the Asian mindset.
They're just not offering enough money to pressing them there, so that might be it.
Hey.
Yeah. But anyway, I hope they resolve that, because really, like you said at the beginning, this is one huge market and the potential there. I just think that the government just wants a piece of it, otherwise they will not allow it. So we'll see what happens. We'll be still covering to see what happens. Hey, Tim Burke, he won his second World Long Drive Championship title in 3 years. That was last Wednesday night when he defeated Jeremy Easterly with a 394-yard drive in the final match to take the title. Burke had to win three matches during the nighttime event on a special setup at Windstar World Casino and Resort in Thackerville in Oklahoma, first dispatching of Justin Young with a 401-yard drive in the quarterfinals before going 2 yards longer in the semis to beat Will Hogue. Burke's longest drives in both rounds came with his first swing. That essentially left him with what was remaining of the 2 minutes and 45 seconds that each player has allotted per match to serve as a cool-down slash exhibition. Easterly, who was the 10th seed in what began as a 64-man match play competition, was the unlikely final opponent for Berg, who was expecting to face 2-time world champion Jamie Satlowski. However, the Canadian failed to advance to the final match when he was unable to find a 60-yard wide grid with a drive in his semifinal match against Easterly in the allotted time. With one final ball to trump Easterly's 380-yard benchmark-setting drive, Satlowski just couldn't find the mark. You know, the 38-year-old Easterly accounted himself well in the final, pounding a 386-yard drive. However, limited by his swing and ball flight, Easterly knew that even his best may not have been enough to get Burke. Burke is a 29-year-old, 6'6", 230-pound, born in Marietta, Georgia, but raised in Orlando, who won the 2013 competition, which played out on a unique stage at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. His final round drive of 427 yards is the longest ever recorded in the last stage of a World Long Drive Championship. However, he found himself quickly eliminated last year in the title defense, but that was all the motivation he needed, as he said, to get his world title belt back and walk away with the $150,000 first prize. The ratings here, well, the news was positive for them, as the owner Golf Channel, as Tuesday's ratings for the live round of 66 was up 263% over last year, while the final night saw 43% over last year. Both ratings were in the vicinity of last week's Prize.com open numbers, and with replays and NBC airing in December, the long drive will be seen by many more eyeballs than any of the fall PGA Tour events. Golf Channel purchased the event, used it for its own content, Energize moved it to Oklahoma, about an hour north of Dallas. Guys are big linebackers, or looked like big linebackers or tight ends of golf. Four of the best went over 400 yards, you know, in a cool evening air, and it was not wind-aided. So, Fred, for the rest of the long drive world, consider this your official notice. This may be only the beginning of the Tim Burke era.
Yeah, you know, I have a good friend who I've worked with and was in long drive for several years, and so I've gone to several of the events, and it really is a lot of fun to watch. These guys get pumped up, they get all amped up, and they just hit it a country mile. Going to practice sessions and watching it. My friend, his longest recorded has been 404. So it's just unbelievable how far these guys hit. It is kind of fun to watch for a little bit of change of pace. Hey, Carlos, getting back to Tiger Woods, we mentioned earlier that he was down in Mexico. But it was pointed out at this week's Shriners Hospitals for Children Open that Tiger Woods won his first PGA Tour event in Las Vegas 20 years ago. The rest, as they say, is history. Woods has gone on to nearly catch Jack Nicklaus with 14 major championship victories, and has amassed over $100 million in career earnings. Injury, personal problems, and constant tinkering with his swing have kept him from surpassing Nicklaus, but he's currently only trails the Golden Bear for the most major titles and Sam Snead for the most PGA Tour wins. He is keeping the fire alive and still hopes to catch both in the not-too-distant future. Speaking in Mexico, Tiger said, "It's important for me to have more than 18 majors when all is said and done. It took Jack his whole career to achieve it, and mine is not done yet. I believe that I have a very good record for 20 years on the tour. The main thing is to get fit and to reach my 40s in good health to be successful as Vijay Singh, who won most of his tournaments at that age. It's something that I hope I will be able to do. I want to play at an elite level with the new kids for a long, long time. Woods may have Nicklaus's major championship record in his sights, but for the rest of the world, for him to reach 18 major championships would require him to win four in his 40s, just to tie Nicklaus, as he turns that age at the end of December. His play this year, when supposedly healthy, was not reminiscent of the majestic shots he produced when he won majors in bunches in the early 2000s. It reminded one more of a 20 handicapper chopping it up at the local Muni track and was, well, hard to watch at times and embarrassing for one of the all-time greats of golf. He has leg, knee, and now back issues over the past 10 years, and the aging process doesn't allow the body to heal and react the same. Plus, Woods' long layoff from golf will rob him of distance and touch necessary to win major titles. Those things are difficult to get back as one ages. We saw that early in the year when he tried to come back this year. It just wasn't there. He will begin rehab after his second back surgery in 2 years. It's becoming apparent that Tiger Woods' days of brilliant golf are rapidly approaching an end, Carlos.
Well, he has a point. You know, Vijay Singh won 22 times after he turned 40, which is the record now for most wins on the PGA Tour by golfers after they turned 40. And Sam Snead, like you mentioned, it was 17, but he said Sam Snead won 82. But anyway, he has a point, and hopefully, like you mentioned, you know, there's a little tough after 40, but technology and medicine is very different nowadays, so anything can happen, and hopefully he can, he says.
But Vijay took the, what was he take, the antler dust? What was that stuff he was taking?
Well,
that helped him.
Yeah, but maybe Tiger can take some other dust. I don't know which one, but he can do something about it. Hopefully he can and can compete. It would be great to see him with the youngsters now that are up and coming, especially Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, who are definitely dominating now golf. Hey, some more news I have here for you, and I'm going to talk right now about the Open Championship Rota. You know, last week we talked about the Open returning to Royal Portrush in 2019. This week, golf correspondent for the Scotland Herald, Nick Rogers, he reported about the Rota for the Open Championship being set at 10. Martin Slumbers, who is the chief executive of the Royal and Ancient, said after confirming that Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland will be staging the 2019 Open earlier last week, and I quote, "We are quite happy with 10 venues at the moment. That's all we're looking at. There are no discussions going on about any other course. This, Portrush, was the big decision to make, and we're looking forward to getting this one going. I think it's important not to get too far ahead of ourselves," end of quote. On the article, Slumbers also discussed the early days of his new tenure, which has been the fling of BBC and ESPN as television host in favor of Sky and NBC. The early days of Slumbers' tenure have been a bit of a whirlwind, and the hasty rejigging of the television contract for the Open after the BBC decided to pull the plug a year early was a robust introduction to his job. You know, given the gee whiz gadgetry that Sky employ, there will be probably cameras here, there, and everywhere at Royal Troon for next year's Open. And after having joined forces with Sky, there remains the prospect for another alliance for the RNA, which is a merger with the Ladies Golf Union. The two St. Andrews-based bodies unveiled that they were having exploratory talks about a union earlier this year, and this chinwags continue. You know, the Open Championship Rota right now is at 10, so the question is, what happens to Turnberry? Fred, with this news and Carson overtaking him at the national polls, I think that the effects of El Nino are starting to affect Donald Trump this past week.
I just watched the news a little bit ago, Carlos, and Donald has fallen to number two in the polls to Ben Carson. That's the first time that he has not been leading all the polls. So Donald's losing on all fronts right at the minute. He'll have to get that turned around. Somebody's going to get fired. I can see it coming. Hey, Billy Andre did not realize he was changing golf forever in 2000 when he won in Las Vegas using a Pro V1 golf ball, but he certainly did. Only 47 players out of the 156-man field agreed to play the new ball in the 2000 Las Vegas Open. After extensive testing by Titleist convinced those that could happen with the new ball. It's going to fly farther, stop quicker, are the words that every touring professional wants to hear. Titleist made good on its promise and launched the golf ball revolution that has been responsible for driving distances to increase year after year. And even with golf course renovations, remodels, and constant stretching, shrink them to mere putt, pitch, and putts. Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player constantly warn about the effect the ball has on rendering classic old golf courses defenseless and obsolete. They both feel the USGA and the RNA, in particular, need to be at the forefront of golf ball regulation to lessen the need for longer and longer golf courses to be built, which require more land usage, more water, more maintenance costs to keep the doors open when golf course revenues have continuously declined since 2009. With performance advantage and popularity of Pro V1 and Pro V1X, Titleist owns over 50% of the golf ball market, and they are able to command nearly $50 a dozen retail, while competitive brands struggle and sell for much less. According to Golf Data Tech, an independent research firm, 2015 August year-to-date U.S. golf ball retail sales were up 6.7% over the same period a year ago. Unit sales were up 2.1%. The average price per dozen is $30.33, which is up 4.5% over the same period a year ago. But Pro V1's popularity among golfers allows Titleist to receive 166% higher pricing than the average golf ball. Trixon, Wilson, Callaway, Nike, TaylorMade, and Bridgestone share the balance of the retail golf ball market. All have soft cover golf balls, but cannot touch the popularity and respect for performance that Titleist has earned over the last 15 years. Carlos, good players and even not so good golfers want to play the same brand the pros play and will pay to have that privilege. Does a Pro V1 make a 20 handicapper score better? Probably not, but they're going to play them anyhow. They're going to spend the $50 and get them, Carlos.
I've been there.
Yeah. Oh, you got one more news story. I tried to jump in ahead of you. You got one more to cover yet.
See, thank God I am the one with the mute button. Thank God. But anyway. Yeah, and I have one more, and Fred, this is one of those feel-good stories. If this one doesn't inspire you, I don't know what will. You know, People Magazine published an article about a 21-year-old Jacob Mosley, for whom caddying wasn't just a way to scrape up a few extra bucks. It was his ticket out of homelessness and his way into college. After Jacob's single mother lost her job in 2007, the family of six was evicted from their Farmington Hills, Michigan apartment. The then 13-year-old Mosley, who watched his family's personal belongings get tossed to the curb, vowed to find a way to help support his family financially. Mosley, his mother, and his four younger siblings were moving around from motels, homeless shelters, and friends' basements when the teen heard about the Western Golf Association's Evans Scholars Foundation, a scholarship that provides full housing and tuition scholarships to deserving young caddies across the nation. The next day, he went to a local golf course to apply for a job. Terry Schuer, Golf Services Manager at Pine Lake Country Club, says Mosley's dedication to the caddy craft was unmatched by any of his teenage peers. Schuer, who trained Mosley, says he's never seen anyone more determined to succeed. Mosley's mother, Michelle Murphy, who struggled to support her children after losing her job, says her son and I quote, has always been a man, even as a little kid, end of quote. Mosley caddied all through middle and high school, working towards the ultimate goal of a college scholarship. But living without a home took a toll on the team's grades, and Mosley was turned down after applying for the Evans Scholarship his senior year of high school. Mosley took out student loans and attended Michigan State, where he got a 3.6 GPA and landed on the Dean's List his freshman year. 2013, he was awarded full ride to Michigan State through the Evans Scholarship. Now in his senior year of college, Mosley plans to use his marketing degree to pursue a career at a marketing agency, but ultimately like to find a way to provide houses to homeless families. So that's a little bit of a way of paying it forward, Fred.
Yeah, I read that story. Really like it a lot. And I had an interview. I've been talking a lot to there's a new head of the First Tee here in town. The First Tee is doing a lot to work with caddy training, and there's several courses in town that are involved with the Evans Scholars Program. Matter of fact, I think there's about 5 kids a year that come out of Toledo that attend college on Evans Scholars Program. So it's a big deal here around town, and they do a great job with it. It's always been a great program, and that's just a really good story. Hey, Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available with discount coupons for huge savings. They not only offer an excellent product line, they also give every golf net the chance to earn commissions on products through their director's program. Make money, be involved in golf, what could be better? They have great travel programs through MyGolf and US, offer discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. That's worth the cost of the monthly membership for United Golf Network right there, Carlos. You can save your whole annual dues just on one trip. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we have our VIG, very important guest of the week, Caroline Powers. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VHG, very important guest of the week. Her name is Caroline Powers. She's the most decorated women's golfer in Michigan State history. She's only a second women's athlete in Michigan State history to win the Alderton Award 3 times. She's earned a number of accolades there, but I'm just going to finish with 2 more. She graduated in May of 2013 with a 3.87 GPA in elementary education and earned All-American Scholars Honors for National Golf Coaches Association 3 times. Was named a Big Ten Distinguished Scholar twice, and she was named also that year recipient of the prestigious Dinah Shore Trophy Award by the LPGA Foundation, which is awarded to a female collegiate golfer who excels in both academics and athletics while demonstrating outstanding leadership and skills and community service. So that is a little bit about Caroline Powers. Fred, tell us a little bit about the interview you have for us.
Yeah, she graduated from MSU, she joined the Sumatra Tour last year, just completed her second year on that tour. She earned a spot in the final stage of LPGA Q School to be held at the beginning of December in Daytona Beach, Florida. We have had her as a guest on the show before. She was kind enough to talk with me about the state of her game, the challenges she has faced playing professional golf, and kind of what it takes to succeed on tour. So we had a great time talking to her today, so go ahead and roll that, Carlos.
We are happy to have Caroline Powers on Back Nine Report this evening. Caroline recently qualified for final stage at the LPGA Tour Q School to be held at the beginning of December. She's been playing on the Sumatra Tour for the last few years and graduated from Michigan State in 2013. Caroline, great to have you back on the show again.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, you've been out there now banging around for a couple of years, traveling around the country, playing professional golf. What is the biggest thing that you've learned maybe about yourself or about playing professional golf over the last couple of years?
Oh, wow. I don't even know if I could whittle it down to one thing. I felt like my rookie year, I feel like that's when you learn everything. And so then this year, I was like, okay, I got it. You know, I know how things work. I got it under my belt. It's my second year. And then I just felt like every single week was, oh, okay, we're learning something else about my golf game. Okay, well, we're learning something else about, you know, how I deal with things going well or things going poorly. But probably one of the biggest things this year is just I had my brother caddying for me all year, and last year I didn't have a caddy. And so I think in the beginning of the year it took me a little bit of time to adjust to that, just because when you don't have a caddy, you're used to doing everything yourself, and when you do, I'm kind of like, oh, well, if he's here, then I should be using him for everything, where I don't think that's how most caddy relationships work. You still need to be, you know, an ownership of your own game and kind of, you know, making decisions, and then he's just there to back you up on things. So that the beginning of the year was a lot with that, and then, I mean, this year was really tough with my golf game and with everything. So just to keep on keeping on, and, you know, the good thing about this game and, you know, doing the pro golf is that every week's a new week. So if you have a bad week, the next week is a fresh slate. So that's always been a pretty good feather in my cap to know that, you know, every week's still a new one. So you got to have a good outlook.
Yeah, looking at the numbers last year, your first year on Sumatra Tour, you ended up finishing the year at number 37 on the money list with a scoring average of 72.7 for the year. And this year, a little higher, you ended the year at number 86 with a 74.1 scoring average, nearly 1.5 strokes higher. Was there anything that you particularly struggled with this year? Was there injury? Was there something that was going on, or just the way things fell together this year?
I wish I could say there was an injury or something, but no. I just, to start the year, I had a few driver issues, and then that kind of, the lack of confidence with that kind of permeated into, you know, the rest of my golf game. And then I took a couple weeks off in the end of May to kind of recharge and just get back on the wagon, because that's the good thing is that you have every week to start fresh, but the bad thing is that you're playing the next week, so it's hard to have a lot of time to figure things out if they're not going well. And so the second half of the year, I really felt like I played a lot better, and, you know, I figured out the driver and things were going better. I still wasn't scoring, just making silly errors and things like that. But definitely the second half of the season, I felt a lot better about just my overall game and where we were headed. And so going into Q school, I was, you know, I missed the cut in the tour championship, and I was pretty mad about that, just because I felt like I played well, and I just, you know, if you don't keep it on the golf course, those few drives, you know, you can hit 12 fairways, but if two of them go out of bounds, then you're kind of up a creek without a paddle. So going into the Q school, I was excited, like, you know, 2015 is over. Thank goodness. I'm glad we had it. We learned a lot, but I'm glad it's over. And so now the focus is just all about next year.
Yeah, I think that's a really good attitude. And like you say, you got to have that short memory because you did play pretty well last year. Evidently, it was a pretty tough golf course. The scoring was high. You ended up finished at T45. Final stage will be the first week of December. Did anything stand out as being different last week, or just you think it was just your attitude? You just kind of grounded out, or what do you think?
I was pretty calm last week, and I, for the most part, I mean, other than a stretch of holes in the third round, I really did play well, and I. You know, that third round is where I lost a few golf balls, and so the numbers added up a little bit faster. But I was glad just to have a better outlook with the driver and I feel really good about my putting right now. And so with my putting, I'm not afraid to miss. I'm just swinging the putter very freely, and that's what I want to have with my driver. And so I had it most of the time this week, but then there's still a few holes where it wasn't the case, and you try and steer it, and when you try and steer it, it definitely does not go where you want it to. So that's what my main focus is going to be for this next 5 weeks, is just really having a good mindset with the driver, because I know my fundamentals are fine with it. It's just I need to get over the hump with my head.
Yeah, every pro golfer you talk to feels that Q School is, you know, the toughest mental challenge or the most challenging thing that they do. And so that, you know, you got to stay calm. You got to trust your game and know where you're at. Do you find that or do you feel it's just another week? You know, I just got to do this.
It's definitely a lot longer week than we have on Symetra, just because there's two golf courses. So you have to, you know, play practice rounds with both of those. And then this week was four rounds. And so just being out there, and not that, like, walking is difficult, but when you're out there in the sun for 6 hours for seven straight days, I think that just kind of wears on you a little bit. But you can definitely see, I think, if you just walk up to the range on a practice day, you can definitely see the girls that are, you know, worried about it and stressing out. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Q School, this is my future. And then you can see the ones that are just going through their usual routines, going through their usual motions. So that's why I feel like I did well this past week, because I was just playing golf. But stage three I know can be different because it's five rounds. So that is a little bit even more of a marathon. But I think the thing you have to know is when you play that many rounds, you can make a couple mistakes, and because you have time to make up for them. So you don't need to freak out if you make a bogey or something. You know, you have time to make a lot more birdies. So hopefully in third stage we can just have the same outlook as this one and just plod along and play some golf.
Yeah, you have played in a few LPGA Tour events. What do you find the biggest difference when you play on the big tour versus the Sumatra Tour? And do you feel like the Sumatra Tour is an adequate training ground for you?
I think Sumatra is definitely an adequate training ground. We, this year and last year especially, I mean, they were my first 2 years, I think it's getting a lot deeper with the competition. And so you know that you're teeing it up with girls that can compete and that you need to play well in order to beat. I think the biggest difference in the actual games is just that the LPGA girls don't make as many mistakes. Like, people, the girls on Symetra and the girls on the LPGA, they're good. They're all, you know, everybody can hit a good shot. Everybody can make a birdie, but it's getting out of trouble if you get into it and not making the big numbers, and, you know, the misses are just, you know, on the bigger side of the green and not short-sighted where you have a tough time getting up and down. So, and that's what I think the biggest key is of scoring and just moving on, is just minimizing your misses a little bit more, because, you know, everybody can hit good shots. It's just about how good the bad ones are.
there seems to be a depth of very good young women finding their way to the LPGA and Sumatra Tours every year. 17-year-old Nellie Cordes, sister of Jessica, won the second stage last week. And now she has to decide whether to attend college or play the Sumatra Tour next year because she's not going to turn 18 until July. As someone who finished college and has been the touring pro now for 2 years, what advice would you give her when she's looking at this?
I am 100% proponent of college. I loved all 4 years. I didn't want to leave. I think it's just that it's such a cool situation to be on a team, and I think you learn a lot about yourself and just about all different, I mean, so many different kinds of people, because usually where you grow up, at least for me, you know, you don't know that many different perspectives on things because everybody is more or less kind of the same. And so in college, you just meet so many more, you know, personalities and backgrounds and things. And I think that the actual golf in college is a great way to develop a little bit more and learning how to win. And I just, at least, unless you are going straight to a big tour and, like, you know, a Jordan Spieth or a Lydia Ko or something like that where they're very clearly dominating no matter what they do, I think that I would go to college at least for a year or two. And, you know, because you have the rest of your life to play competitive golf, and you don't have the rest of your life to live your college life and make awesome friends and do that kind of thing. So I don't think that anybody should be in too much of a rush to grow up and just, you know, enjoy the time of your late teens or early 20s as a college student and then go play golf, because it's not like other sports where there's so much of a timetable on your age. I think it'll only make her better.
It can get very lonely when you travel around the country from tournament to tournament. You mentioned your brother John is now traveling with you as your caddy, coach, helping you day to day. How important have you found that to be? You said there was some adjustment early in the year, but how important do you feel that's become to kind of keep you on track and help you in the off hours when you're not on the course?
I think a caddy in general is really helpful, just to have a set of eyes on you each week, because it's easy. I mean, things just kind of shift all the time with your alignment, with your ball position. Just little things creep a lot of times with golf. And so if you're on your own, you don't really notice that until it's really far off, because you're kind of, you know, making up for it. So I thought that was really helpful this year. And then, as far as being lonely, I guess it can be if, you know, I really like being home and I'm a little bit more of a homebody, so I definitely do miss that. But we have some great friends out on tour, and so everybody's out there together, so we're kind of like our own little family out there. And so I haven't found it to be very lonely, because if you want, there's just everybody's doing the same thing and totally gets you, so... Or having a really good time, just, you know, making new friends and having a great time.
Now, listen, this is probably the most important question, okay? So your family is loaded with PGA golf professionals. I mean, your father was a hockey coach, okay? So I know he has ideas. Your mother, your uncle are both teaching pros. You have several cousins that are PGA certified, plus... One cousin who played on the LPGA Tour is now the University of Florida women's golf team head coach. So when you get together for family dinners, is everyone trying to give you advice? And who do you listen to first? And how do you filter out all the other stuff?
The good thing is that usually we don't have to talk about that when we're all together. So it's a good break.
There's a no golf rule.
It's not necessarily a rule, but, you know, it's all of our jobs, so when we're together, it's kind of nice to, you know, explore the other things we like to do with our lives. But, no.
There's other things besides golf in your life?
Yeah, sometimes those other interests kind of creep up a little bit. That's the great thing is that if I need help with anything, somebody's always there. Emily's done it before. She's a huge help. My uncle, her dad, is a huge help because he saw it all when he was caddying for her. My brother's a huge help because he's with me every week. My dad's a huge help because he still has, you know, the coaching side of it and a little bit. He just gets it. And then my mom and my sister, they just really kind of keep me grounded. If I have a bad round, they're like, what are you doing? They're like, Caroline, this isn't like you. Get yourself together. So it's a good balance of everything. But I definitely have more than enough people to help me when I need help.
Well, we have been chatting with Sumatra Tour member and aspiring LPGA Tour star, Caroline Powers, who is qualified for final stage of Q School, which will be held December 2nd to the 6th down at LPGA International in Daytona. And you can follow Caroline at her website, www.carolinepowersgolf.com, on Facebook, or on Twitter at @CARO_Powers. So, Carol, we certainly want to wish you the best of luck. We will be following your results and look forward to seeing you at some of the tournaments this summer.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for having me again.
Thank you, Carolyn.
And there you have it. That was the interview for our very important guest, VIG of the Week, Caroline Powers. I want to second that. I want to wish her the best now in Q School, and hopefully, like you said, she can get to the next level. So how about anything else that you would like to add to this, about this interview?
No, only Carlos, that I've known her family my whole life. We all, her uncle and her mother, and we all grew up together and played a lot of golf together, and known her for years, and watched her cousin Emily grow up and play, and got to play with her when she was a young girl, and she was a star at Michigan State also, played on the LPGA Tour for a while, and now is coaching down at Florida. It's just a unique family of golf professionals, and it's a great story. Hopefully one of these days I'm going to write it up and get it in the right place. But really, really fun to watch her. She grew up just a few miles down the road from where I live now, and have watched her play in the junior golf here in Toledo and excel at Michigan State and trying to get on the LPGA Tour. So we just want to wish her a lot of luck, and she's a wonderful young lady.
And we're going to take one more short break. When we come back, we're going to have our practice range and the first time of our newest segment, the Chip Shot. So you don't want to go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range trip. Every week, Fred and I take our shots at one topic that we pick, and each one give our own opinion. But this week, we're going to include inside the practice range a chip shot. And from now on, we're going to have this new segment. Hopefully, we'll have it every week, but at least that's our plan, to have the chip shot, which should be a five-minute segment about something that one of our expert colleagues, friends would be giving their opinions on it. And this week it happened to be Kieran Clark, so he's going to take a little bit more than the 5 minutes. So bear with him. You know that he likes to talk a little bit. So anyway, we're going to start off the practice range with his chip shot, which would be about the European Tour and the Race to Dubai Final Series. And then from there, we'll go to Fred, and finally I will give my take. So Fred, let's take now the chip shot from Kieran Clark.
Good evening, Fred and Carlos, and thank you for having me on the show tonight to discuss something other than Mr. Donald Trump. It makes for a very welcome change. and we're now entering one of those periods in the year when the focus in golf is actually on the European Tour, with its four-event season-concluding final series beginning this week in Turkey. And after this week, the series will then spend 2 weeks in China with the WGC HSBC Champions and then the BMW Masters before the finale in Dubai for the DP World Tour Championship later in November. And the top 60 players on the Race to Dubai ranking will qualify for that final event. And although it's a strong period for the European Tour, such attention does naturally raise questions regarding the uncertain future of the circuit and its present status in the game. And Rory McIlroy leads the Race to Dubai at this point, but it is actually his participation in the final series that has brought with it some controversy. And having missed a significant part of the summer, of course, due to an ankle ligament injury, the four-time major champion was set to fall short of competing in the minimum number of events that are required to be eligible for the final series. And consequently, newly installed Chief Executive Keith Pelly granted McIlroy a special exemption into the series despite him not having played in the required 13 sanctioned tournaments. Now, Carlos and I discussed this 2 weeks ago in the Back Nine Report, and Pelly will cite the importance of Rory's participation and for sponsors, of course, and generating interest, and that is an understandable motivation. But for me, it sets a problematic precedent when it comes to players having power over the tour. Put it simply, rules have to be the same for everybody, whether you're ranked number 1 or 101. And McIlroy's injury certainly complicated matters, that's undeniable. But he should have been obliged to make up the missing events at the Dunhill Links and the British Masters, which would have been a massive boost to those events in the UK. And this is a particular sore point for Chubby Chandler, whose ISM group manages a number of players, including Danny Willett. And he said in a recent interview, you know, what he, and I quote, what he, Keith Pelly, didn't grasp was his decision affects everyone's contracts. If, say, Danny Willett finished 11th on the money list and not 10th because Rory is still there, then Danny loses money for 3 years off his deal. If he finishes second instead of first, he'll lose even more. And Chandler, in typically combative form, raised the issue of potential legal action, and he said, I reckon we could sue him. We'd have grounds for that. I'm not saying we will, but there will be people who will suffer because they have moved the goalposts halfway through the game. And another issue for the European Tour is that players have to be full members if they are to be eligible for the Ryder Cup. Paul Casey, for example, despite being a strong performer this year, is not able to qualify or play at Hazeltine next year because he is not a member of the Tour, instead focusing solely on the PGA Tour. The Ryder Cup is used as a bargaining chip, in some senses blackmailing the leading players to remain part of the Tour in Europe, even though, if you include majors and WGCs, they only have to play in 5 regular events to be eligible. But the question is, what if Rory McIlroy was to decide that he no longer wanted to play in Europe? He has considered that move in the past. Would the European Tour make the decision to exclude him from the Ryder Cup? That would seem nonsensical. So, he potentially has the power to alter the rules if he was to make that decision. That would be good news for players like Paul Casey, but it would damage the European Tour's ability to guarantee the participation of their top players. And all of this raises questions, of course, about the long-term viability of the Tour. With the monumental purses from the PGA Tour and in the US, from a financial perspective, playing in America is the only option for these top players. It is a huge challenge now for the European Tour to combat and overcome that disparity in finances, but there are perhaps some paths they could go down that would arrest much of that gap. And I spent time recently talking with John Huggan, who is one of the most experienced and knowledgeable journalists in the game. The man lives and breathes golf and has the most incredible perspective and knowledge. And we discussed the Tour and its future, and we agreed on a number of points. Firstly, European Tour should align itself with the Asian and PGA of Australia Tours in a similar manner to what it does with the Sunshine Tour in South Africa. In essence, creating an all-world tour outside the US that would take events to the best courses in Asia and Australia in addition to Europe, strengthen the purses and tournaments that way. And this is related to our point as well, which is another option is to target select periods of the season. As far as I'm concerned, there are far too many events on the schedule. 47 this year on the European Tour, and of course the same thing is there on the PGA Tour. Now, you know, that's great for the lower ranked guys, but the game doesn't owe anybody a living. The focus should be on fewer high quality events rather than having dozens of tournaments that no one actually cares about. target periods of the year when the PGA Tour schedule is weaker. Not in the weeks around the majors, of course, or the FedEx Cup, but earlier and later in the season. For example, after the Middle East swing in January, have a month in Australia and New Zealand playing the high-quality courses there in attractive tournaments. Put it this way, would you rather play in front of the Duncan Morans in Phoenix or play Royal Melbourne? I think we all know the answer to that one. Another thing that I'm particularly keen on is the empowering of giving leading players the opportunity to host their own tournaments, as we've seen with Rory McIlroy and the Irish Open, as well as Ian Poulter, Luke Donald and Lee Westwood at the British Masters. Get these guys on side. Hosting an event is good for them commercially, and it is an easy way of attracting interest, both financially and in terms of spectators. And these are all things that have to be pursued if the European Tour is to remain viable in the future. And the race to Dubai in particular, it does seem incidentally unfair that Andy Sullivan could win three times this year and not actually be inside the top 10 in the rankings. Yeah, and that disparity, of course, is caused by the fact that most of the money is earned in the majors and WGCs, which is why Rory is at the top. There are essentially two European tours, the one that Rory plays and the one that Andy Sullivan plays. And if you want to make things more equal and competitive, then rather than simply using earnings to determine the Race to Dubai ranking, introduce a point system that would benefit all of the players. But, of course, I have to say, do not include a points reset to the last event, which is, of course, my biggest criticism of the FedEx Cup. It becomes rather contrived that way. So, anyway, I've talked for long enough, and these are my thoughts on the Race to Dubai and the European Tour and what it can do to thrive in the future. And Fred and Carlos, I'll leave it to you both now to disagree with me. Thanks for having me on, and see you later, guys. Cheers.
Disagree? I don't think so. I think I would second every single thought that he's saying, and he touched on basically most of the subjects that we can talk about. I mean, he talked about the problems with the Rory McIlroy exemption. He talks about the tour being too big, not enough purses. Distributed, really is giving a problem right now, this competition. He mentions also this thing about an old world tour. There, I would say, you know, it would be a little bit of a rough time with the logistics and all that, and having to travel all around the world. I think that would be the only major problem. But Fred, what's your take so far on this and a reaction to what Kieran said?
Well, first of all, Kieran and I and you, we're all on the same page pretty much with everything on the European Tour. It has become a minor tour. Most of the good stuff that happens on the European Tour comes from the majors and the WGC events, those eight tournaments, plus the players, which are co-sanctioned by the European Tour. So that only leaves about four or five tournaments that the guys have to play in Europe to maintain their European Tour status. And some of the guys, just like Ian Poulter last week, find it hard to get that done. They have to fly clear to Hong Kong to get one more start in. So Keith Pelly definitely has some issues. I have an article on Back 9 blog about several of the issues that he's facing right now, and some of them are just exactly what Kieran was talking about. But let me talk just a little bit about the final series. The first point is he did set a dangerous precedent with the medical exemption he awarded to Rory McIlroy, and Kieran was right on. He could have played in the Dunhill, and he could have played in the British Masters, which would have given him the required number. But because of his schedule and what he's doing, he just wouldn't play in them. The final series, the Race to Dubai final series, makes up four events. It's like the FedEx Cup playoffs in that way. It starts this week with the Turkish Airlines Open in Antalya, Turkey, at the Montgomery Maxwell Golf Course. It has a $7 million purse. The next week, they go to the WGC HSBC Championship in Shanghai, which is a joint sanction event with the PGA Tour. It's an $8.5 million purse. They stay in Shanghai for the BMW Masters, which is another $7 million purse, and then they go to Dubai for the season-ending DP World Championship, and that's an $8 million purse. So you add those four tournaments up, so in the next 4 weeks on the European Tour, they're playing for $30.5 million in total purse money, which that's big money for the European Tour. I know that's week in, week out money on the PGA Tour, but that's really big money for the European Tour. So you have to applaud George O'Grady for getting this thing done before he left the office there on the European Tour. In addition, Carlos, they're playing for $5.5 million in bonus money, just like the FedEx Cup has their bonus pool. The top 15 finishers in Dubai are going to get a sliding scale of bonus. And let me run through that just a little bit. So the bonus for finishing first is going to be $1.25 million. But if that player who wins, so let's say it's going to be Rory, if Rory plays in three of the four final series events, he will get an additional 50% bonus, which is another $625,000. So that puts that up to $1.875 million. So that's serious money. That gets their attention, okay? So even the big guys can go play 4 weeks on the European Tour at the end of the year before they shut her down for Christmas. So so this is a really big deal for these guys. Right now, the race to Dubai, you've got Rory as number one, followed by Danny Willett, who's number two, Louis Oosthuizen, Justin Rose, Shane Lowry, Brandon Grace, Bernd Wiesbacher, Soren Yeltsin, Tongshai Daidi, and Anirban Lahiri is number 10. You know, we talked about the problem with the point system with Andy Sullivan last week. Three wins, not even in the top 10 in the race to Dubai. Kieran again mentioned in his piece. The first event's going to be held in Turkey this week, very close to Syria. Well, it's still a couple hundred miles away, but as we know, that's not the safest part of the world right now, and Turkey has their problems also, but it's such a beautiful area, and the golf course is fantastic there. And part of the charm, Carlos, of the European Tour is the fact that they, like the LPGA, play all around the world. People in Russia, India, Czech Republic, and South Africa get to see some of the best players in the world compete. But the problem is that many of those tournaments have very small purses and cannot draw the best players. And they're matched against major U.S. events, and they're in just less marketable portions of the world to begin with. So it's been a reality for some time and becoming even more so apparent today that the European Tour needs to be split into a major and a minor tour. Again, you know, the European Tour commissioner, CEO Keith Pelley, it's like a big puzzle, a big jigsaw puzzle. He's trying to fit these pieces together, go forward, and keep the European Tour viable. But, you know, Greg Norman said it 15 years ago, we need a world golf tour. And, Carlos, it is coming. It's coming very, very fast. Somebody's going to get that put together and throw big money at these guys to come play all around the world.
You know what? Maybe Donald Trump, now that he's not going to be president, apparently, he might be, you know, and not having Turnberry, maybe he could do that, but I don't know.
He can be commissioner of his own golf tour?
Of course. The World Golf Tour. I don't know. Maybe just throwing something out there, Donald. You know, just keep yourself busy. Anyway, there's not much that I can add to what you both have said. I mean, you've covered pretty much everything. So what I'm going to base a little bit is about who you think is going to win. And I'm going to take it. I'm just going to say Rory's not going to win it. Okay, he's not going to win it. I think that Danny Willett has a very good chance of picking him up. I mean, he's just under 300,000 points there, and there are 32 million coming in these four tournaments that are going to be coming now. So, and besides, you all know that Henrik Stenson is going to win the last one. He's the only one to win it. So, nobody else. Everybody else is.
He owns that place.
Yeah, he owns it. But anyway, it's unfair when you see down the rankings there and you see that Danny Willett has played 19 times to 9 times of Rory. Like you said, it's just because of the big-time money tournaments that he plays. Then you see everybody else with 21, 27, 22, 28, 21, 24. You know, those people, those guys are going around the globe to try to earn this money, and for him just to take that medical exemption and be there. And I'm sorry, Rory, I like you and love you a lot, but hey, this one I cannot pass by. But I would love to see, you know, Matthew Fitzpatrick do great. The 21-year-old, he keeps just getting better. His last six starts, he has been a winner and three times runner-up. And he's playing this event for the first occasion, but that has been the case in many of his tournaments this season. And, you know, it has not stopped him from playing beautifully. Andy Sullivan, very respectable fourth last year in Turkey, and hopefully he can do something to make up for those three wins and be over there. I think Shane Lowry is another player who's playing good enough to have won the WGC Bridgestone in Ohio recently, and then at his last start, he finished runner-up at the British Masters. So he's in good form, and he's one veteran that you can see there. And if you want to see somebody from the outside, hey, Fabrizio Zanotti finished 19th. And this event 12 months ago could get a good start. You know, he's been, more especially of late, when recording three top four finishes in his last five starts. So if you're talking about momentum, he's one that has it. So I'll let you say who you think it could win this, and before we wrap up.
You know, I really think Rory's going to win it. I think it's pretty much a done deal, to be quite honest with you. The thing is, it's four events. It's not even four rounds, okay? It's 16 rounds. And the longer you make something, the most consistent, the cream will rise to the top, the best player will, you know, it will show out over that kind of length of time. So Rory is by far the best player in the group. Now, you do have someone in there, Justin Rose, who's playing at a very high level right now. He's played great the end of the year here. So he could very well sneak up there and do very well. I like Brandon Grace. He's been playing. He's very consistent. He's played well in some of the majors. He's done a great job this year. A guy that keeps popping up, you know, Tongchai Daiji, this Anirban Lahiri, but they just don't have the experience. JD has the experience, but they just don't have the experience of being under that kind of pressure. I just don't see them being able to pull it off over four events. They might win an event. They might do well in a couple of them. But I don't see him doing well all four events. Now, I'm going to throw a name out, and I don't usually do this. I'm not a big Ian Poulter fan, but he plays so well in Turkey. If he gets off to a good start, it could get his attention, and he could run the table on this thing. So I think his biggest problem is lack of apathy, or just lack of attention span. I think he's kind of like ADD or something. But if this gets his – it's kind of like Bubba. You know, if something gets his attention, he plays very well. And so if he can kind of get into it and play well in Turkey, he might get off to a good start and maybe go for it. And then for a young guy, I like your choice of Matt Fitzpatrick. He's playing at a very high level right now, and I think he could do well over the 4 weeks. The only problem is, again, this is a lot of golf for a young guy. At this time of year, these young guys are used to taking the winter off, you know, not being out there really with the pressure day in and day out. So that might get to him a little bit. But he's really playing well right now, Carlos.
I think he's going to do well, and I'm going to be watching him closely. And Danny Willett, hopefully he'll win it and get that first place that he should be right now in the Race to Dubai. Well, we're going to wrap
Chubby,
up now.
Make Chubby happy and richer.
Yep.
Chubby doesn't care about his players. He just worried about his percentage he was going to get. That's all he's caring about.
The fat check. That's why he likes it. The fat checks. Anyway, let's go for the final putts now. I'm going to start as usual and have the first one. Is that world number one, Jason Day? He won the Australian Sports the Don Award 2 months after claiming his first major title. He was honored at the annual Sports Australia Hall of Fame Awards and induction dinner on Wednesday night in Melbourne. The night also featured eight inductions into the Hall of Fame. Day's just the second golfer in 3 years to win the Don Award, which honors the Australian sportsperson who most inspired the nation in the past 12 months. Adam Scott was the first golfer to win the Don in 2013. Day won the PGA Championship title with a record score of 20. under 2 months earlier, he collapsed with an attack of vertigo during the U.S. Open, but recovered to share the lead after the third round and finished fourth. They could not attend, as you all know, he's in the States for the birth of his second child, and his mother, Denning, accepted the award on his behalf. There were originally 12 nominations that were narrowed to Bay Surfers Mick Fanning and Julian Wilson, track cycling legend Anna Mears, and rugby megastar NFL convert Jared Hines. So he was against a very big company there, and he won, so congratulations for him. And finally, I have also that earlier this year, as you might remember, it was announced that the four of England's top golfers will take turns hosting the British Masters when that event was returning to the European Tour scheduled this year. Ian Poulter, Luke Donald, Justin Rose, and Lee Westwood will rotate as the tournament host, with Poulter already taking this year's British Masters to Woburn, that was in October 8th to the 11th. Next year will be Luke Donald's turn, and he has chosen the Grove in Hertfordshire as the venue for next year's British Masters after the tournament's successful return to the European Tour. And, you know, highly regarded 21-year-old, like we have mentioned, Yorkshire man Matthew Fitzpatrick, he won by 2 strokes in the first competition since 2008 when it was removed from the calendar after failing to attract a new sponsor. The Grove will next year host only its second European Tour event, having held a World Golf Championship tournament 9 years ago that was won by former world number one Tiger Woods. Fred, the next 2 years, Justin Rose and Lee Westwood will get to pick where they will host the tournament. We look forward to see where that would be.
Yeah, Carlos, a couple things I have here real quick as we wrap up tonight. PGA Tour players were warned about health concerns in Malaysia via an email from the PGA Tour. You know, whoever said golf is a sissy sport didn't know what they were talking about. Golfers are taking their life into their hands this week to play a silly game for millions of dollars in Malaysia. First, they risk a long flight over the Pacific Ocean, then they risk contracting typhoid or other serious illness, even lung cancer from the air pollution in that country. The email said that there's been over 30 cases of typhoid reported in Kuala Lumpur since the beginning of August. No fatalities have been reported from the outbreak, and players and staff were advised to only drink bottled or boiled water and avoid ice and raw fruits, vegetables, and meats. They were also warned about the poor air quality because of severe drought conditions. Also, Carlos, the Chicago Tribune reported that the mansion that was the American Golf's father, Charles Blair McDonald, is up for sale. It was built in 1897. It can be yours for just a tad under $2 million, and it sits by the Chicago Golf Club. McDonald founded the exclusive golf club, and it is the oldest 18-hole golf course in the United States. McDonald named the three-story home Ballyshear after his grandfather's Ballyshear Manor and estate in Scotland. Also, Carlos, a couple things real quick. The AJGA announced their players of the year. Philip Barbary from Shreveport, Louisiana, and Hannah O'Sullivan from Chandler, Arizona, were named the 2015 AJGA Players of the Year. Past winners of this award, Carlos, include Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, and Jordan Spieth. So they joined some pretty exclusive company there. And for me to wrap up tonight, you talked about Jason Day winning an award in Australia. His video that is playing right now on YouTube, and it's called Never Say Die, the Jason Day story. In it, he says, I got addicted to the process of getting better. He came from unbelievable circumstances in the Outback Desert to become one of the best golfers in the world. And in America, we can't get our kids away from their smartphones and iPads long enough to even hit a few golf balls. So I just love this video. I think every child should watch it. I think every person should watch it, actually. Never Say Die, the Jason Day story on YouTube.com. If you haven't looked at it, Carlos, take a look at it.
I have, and I have to second that. Everybody has to look at it. That's a very inspirational story. Jason Day, what a guy, what a player. Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us. Special thanks to our VIG Very Important Guest of the Week, Caroline Powers. Good luck for her in the Q School. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.